A group who have interest in saucers and specialize in various other subjects as a sideline, such as photography and electronics, they're about to launch the TAAPIB. Any guesses? the Toledo Area Aerial Phenomena Investigation Bureau. More and more, and I use this, Bob, as a lead-in for your particular area, more and more, I find that young people, now many of the letters we get are from engineers, are from scientists, from doctors, businessmen, but also a large percentage of young guys who are in high school or just recently left high school. I get the impression that Mr. Urbanski is also a high school student. You yourself are a senior at the Newark High, Bob?
Correct.
Now, in your club, I guess, along with adults, you have a lot of also older teenagers, do you not?
Yes, we do.
What do you think it is that has caused this big rash of interest in unidentified flying objects? Is it maybe the same thing that the teenagers of my generation looked for in Buck Rogers or something about the unknown? What do you think?
Well, I think it could stem from that. I think that people are most interested in finding out what is flying around in our skies. People are always interested in this kind of stuff, and curiosity goes a long way with human beings. And I think that people should be told the truth about flying saucers. The United States Air Force says hands-off policy on the UFOs. I don't see why the United States Air Force has to condemn this information. I see no sense in it.
Well, I know the Earl's going to have something to say a little later about the Air Force and their position that they've taken on this. But you said that the youngsters are trying to find out or want to know what's flying around in our skies. Well, how do we know, in fact, anything is flying around in our skies other than airplanes and jets and missiles?
Well, most of this detailed information either comes from reliable sources. People have taken motion pictures and colored films. Otherwise, the only thing we have to go on is just people's words that they've seen these objects.
And this is the area where I think most people question. It's just a collection of words from people. We have nothing actual, factual, a photograph that we can show and point to and say, this is for sure, there's no questioning this. Earl and I have talked about this quite often, and I'm still straddling that fence and waiting for the day that someone comes up with something sure fire. Until then, I guess we're stuck with the words of dependable people. Let's just take a couple of telephone questions here before we get into an area that I know Earl would like very much to get into, and we'll do our best to answer this evening without the scientific mind or the mathematician amongst us, Bob Grove. What's your question, please? Could we define what the problem was about the flying saucers buzzing the White House? This is something, Earl, that I seem to recall you talking about before. And Ricky, you know something about this?
Buzzing the White House, I'm not sure if they were or not, but they were over Washington. They were flying in the vicinity of the White House, but not buzzing it. They were flying over in the restricted airspace of Washington.
Mm-hmm. And Earl, do you have something further there?
Well, I have quite a long account on this. I would like very much to go at this in another time if I could. Is that permissible?
This will take a good little while?
It would.
Okay. All right. So you keep
I'll
listening 2 hours.
I'll refer to it, by the way, this evening, however.
Our UFO roundtable, and Earl has the complete story on that, but he feels it would take too much time because we have several other areas we'd like to get into this evening. Promise, Earl?
Promise.
Okay. Bob, very briefly, did you have something to say on this subject?
No, I don't.
Okay. Thank you for calling. Program PM, your question. If an astronaut is orbiting the Earth and a UFO has maneuvered alongside of him, what would the astronaut likely do? Oh, you know, what is a man likely to do if he's kicked by a mule? This is dealing in supposition. Oh, no. Have our space directors ever considered this? Well, this I think makes it a good question, the last part of it there. Any opinions here?
He would probably take some photos of it with his hand camera. That's about all he could do, and radio back to the capsule communicator and tell him about it. That's about all he could do.
I don't think there's much he could do except look at it and try to get more details on it.
Earl?
I do plan at a future evening to cover this quite completely due to the fact that I recently met Bob Walker, or Joe Walker, I should say. I've seen so many Bobs around here. And But I will be corresponding with him as soon as certain photographs are finished and are ready to mail to him. So I would like to go into quite detail on that, too, for a future time.
Okay, and I'll just add that the reason Earl mentions that is that Joe Walker, just to refresh your memory, when he came back from one of his flights, reputedly, had reported seeing flying saucers or some kind of object and getting pictures of them, and he later denied that right here on Program PM when we had him on the show. So I think there is room for Earl to expand there, and if I know Earl, he will be quite expansive. Okay? Thank you for calling. Very quickly now, Program PM, what's your question? Last week, we said that the Air Force knew quite a bit about what? About the UFOs. And why do we think they won't say anything about them? Well, I think now is the time, Earl. In answer to your question, I think Earl has a few dozen well-chosen words. So, Earl, right now, let me... I know Earl has an open letter. Would you like to explain the circumstances of this letter, Earl?
Well, immediately following last Thursday night's broadcast, I answered three phone calls. Is this gentleman on the air right now, on the phone right now, by the way?
This isn't the man you're talking
to. Oh, thank you. Bob was answering calls in the engineer's room. I could see him through the glass wall here, and I think he perhaps answered about three as well. The calls, as always, were from serious listeners. The last call was most interesting to me, for the gentleman calling was an Air Force officer of high rank, retired. He had never before heard the program, so naturally was at a disadvantage from the standpoint of not knowing how thoroughly we've been covering this UFO subject here. He told me that I had been rough on the Air Force. We spoke for about 10 minutes on the phone, and in closing he told me he had enjoyed talking with me, and this, I assure you, was mutual. Today, after talking with you, Harv, I checked the phone book to confirm the fact that it was really he who had called me.
Not just a person using his name.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And he admitted immediately it was he I had spoken with, and again said, you were rough on the Air Force. He told me he would tune in KYW at 10:30 tonight because I knew we'd be on rather late due to the news. And I said, fine, but I wanted to speak to you over the air. And in fairness to you, I will neither mention your name nor your rank. So here is an open letter. Can I read it this time? Will I take the time to it?
Fine. I'll just make a comment that it's an awful lot of rank. Go ahead.
Dear sir, thank you for calling me last Thursday, also for the time you gave me today when I called you. First of all, permit me to say I do not wish to be rough on the boys in blue, many of whom are friends and acquaintances of mine, and many, incidentally, have been instrumental in helping me by furnishing me with valuable UFO information, knowing I would use it discreetly. When I speak of the Air Force as I do, I am not criticizing loyal Air Force personnel carrying out official policies. Consider clarifying statements by Captain E.J. Ruppelt, the former project chief, when he said, and I'm quoting him, I was continually told, tell them about the ones we've solved. Don't mention the unknowns. There were two factions. One believed the spaceship answer, but felt it should clamp down on information until we had all the answers. Another group favored giving more facts to the public, including the best cases, unsolved movies. A new policy went into effect. Don't say anything. Unquote. Several years ago, following a lecture, a gentleman wearing wings came to my car, and after introducing himself to me, told me he was bitter about the way the Air Force was handling the UFO story. His reason for this statement was he had lost two of his buddies in a plane because of a UFO. Yet the Air Force, he said, claims UFOs don't exist. Sir, the other night you said the government had no money to investigate UFOs some years ago, and you and a few others had to dig down in your own pockets. And then, when I later questioned you after you had said, do you really seriously believe flying saucers exist? You said, we spent $250,000 and didn't come up with anything tangible. Now, I have questioned you on the amount you had spent, and you said, well, that was legal. We used expense money. My own investigating has cost me money that I have laid aside from my earnings, but with this relatively small sum, I have found out a very great deal about UFOs, about unidentified flying objects. Sir, in our conversation today, you asked me about physical evidence. Aerial Phenomena Research Organization in Tucson has the facts pertaining to the famous physical evidence case in which it was found that metal recovered from a disintegrated UFO could not be duplicated through terrestrial techniques. We have photos of a UFO taken in the presence of 100 witnesses on an IGY expedition and other incidents which led to the Brazilian government's recognition of the UFO as a controlled craft of unknown origin. Then, too, we have the complete account of the, and I'll spell this out, it's ITAIPU, Fortress incident, where two sentries were burned by a UFO as told by a doctor who was at the scene and attended the injured men. Then, too, you must surely be familiar with Project Saucer case number 144, which is the Eastern Airlines case of Captain C.S. Childs. We could spend much time on each of the following cases as well. The Gorman-Fargo, North Dakota case, or the Mantell-Godman, known to the Air Force as a Project Saucer case number 33, and the well-known Secretary of the Navy, Dan Kimball case in 1952, or the W.B. Nash, or W.H. Fortenberry, Pan Am Airways pilots case of July 15th of 1952, to mention only a very few. This afternoon you asked me if I thought there was any intelligence within these craft. In 1960, the former CIA Director, Vice Admiral R.H. Hillenketter, in his first public opinion on the nature of UFOs, stated, and I quote, "Unknown objects are operating under intelligent control. It is imperative," he said, "that we learn where the UFOs come from and what their purpose is. Any person who has been a serious ufologist knows the name of the late Captain Edward J. Ruppelt, former head of the Air Force UFO Project." In July of 57, backstage at the Gary Moore Show, Ruppelt told my good friend Major Donald E. Kehoe that some Air Force officers were angry about his book, especially his disclosure of censorship and the secret intelligence conclusion that the UFOs were interplanetary. During the November flap of 1957, he confirmed by phone his San Diego press statement that there was enough evidence of UFO existence to call for more investigation, and that Project Blue Book had reports of radiation and electromagnetic interference from UFOs. Like Ruppelt, I have before me the statements of many an Air Force officer opposing UFO secrecy. I only regret that time will not permit me to tell you what they have said. In Major Kehoe's book, The Flying Saucer Conspiracy, the chapter entitled The Hidden Orders, on page 82, he states the following. For almost 2 months during October and November of 53, the censors had fought to hide the startling saucer discoveries. Then suddenly in November, they had been faced with a showdown by a presidential directive, Executive Order 10501, the classification of restricted, was officially abolished effective December 15, 1953. It was a stunning blow to the silence group, for both JNAP 146 and Air Force Regulation 200-2 were restricted defense documents. Unless the censors violated President Eisenhower's directive, it looked as if they would have to reveal these two long-hidden blackout orders on request. Besides this, the president's edict blocked a new plan to explain away the saucers through a so-called fact sheet. Just before the president's order, this remarkable statement had been drawn up to answer the flood of inquiries. After dragging out all the old alibis, such as hoaxes, birds, mirages, and balloons, this document also attempted to offset the key points I had revealed. We of NICAP are trying very hard for a congressional hearing. According to my most recent information, the reaction of Congress shows the impact of the NICAP evidence for all members of Congress received copies of the August-September 1962 NICAP issue, which was really a preview of evidence of the existence of UFOs. It is pitiful when one realizes the apathy shown by the American public. Far too few are contacting their congressmen, perhaps because they do not realize the dangers of secrecy, especially the risk of accidental war. A few weeks back, we mentioned that the Strategic Air Command, as we have found out, had on several occasions chased UFOs, possibly concerned that Congress might probe UFO investigation costs. The Air Force now justifies the huge outlay as, quote, scientifically worthwhile, unquote. Major C.R. Hart, UFO spokesman in Washington, D.C., in a letter to New York's NICAP affiliate president, Muriel Brookman, to the question, why does the Air Force oppose open congressional hearings, said, or rather, I should say, wrote, and this is the quote, the Congress of the United States has more important affairs to which their limited time is devoted, unquote. Now, in closing, I would like to invite you, sir, to take my place at the microphone here at KYW, and I promise to remain silent during the entire broadcast, giving you ample time to express the Air Force's views.
And that's right in keeping with our invitation to other Air Force spokesmen, Earl, to also step forward and participate with our Ufology Roundtable. And I will be the first to say that the invitation was, well, not turned down, but what they were willing to contribute was simply that they know nothing about it. I would like for them to tell me a little bit more. So again, to this gentleman or to anyone else connected with the Air Force, please, we would very much like to hear them answer some questions that our listeners have been putting to us, and that Earl, you and also Bob Grove have been raising. I'd like to hear firm answers from the Air Force. Right now it's 9 minutes before 11 o'clock. This is Harv Morgan. This is the Ufology Roundtable. Earl, if you have any answer from this former Air Force officer, I hope you will let me know about it.
I will let you know immediately.
And I
would be only too happy to call you.
I'd be very interested in knowing his answer to your answer to him. All right, let's get some more telephone questions in now. What's yours, please? All right, Chris, go ahead. Mm-hmm. About the Citizens Band formula. Well, let me stop you because Bob Grove isn't here, and he was handling that particular phase of our discussion on the Citizens Band. So would you call next week when he'll be here? You want to try the other question? All right, go ahead. Are there many hams connected with ufology? Amateur radio operator. Well, let's find out. What do you think?
I happen to know Edward Kopp here in the general Cleveland area. I think he's out in North Royalton. And from what he tells me, it sounds that that question would be answered in the affirmative.
All right. Ricky, Bob, what do you think?
Well,
and your clubs?
Well, in our group, when we intend to start something like this, of course, we don't have too many members that do have amateur tickets, but we're hoping that we can get more. And myself, I'm going for one soon, and I'm going to try to start some sort of net. I think it's necessary in order to get all the sightings.
It would seem to lend itself to this sort of thing, know, keeping immediate contact.
Calls, yes.
Okay, thank you for calling. Program PM, your question, please. You were listening in last week. We told about the different magnetic detectors, yes. Mm-hmm. Where can you get these? Bob Grove was speaking last week about the magnetic detectors. Do you know where one might get them, Earl?
No, I think the best thing to do is refer him to Bob Grove.
Okay, you drop us a letter here at the UFO Roundtable, Program PMKYW, and Bob will answer it for you in the mail, okay? Just send it to UFO Roundtable, okay? Thank you for calling. Program PM, your question. Were there any unidentified flying objects shot at by weapons of this country? Do we know of any for a fact, Bob Miller? Ricky, you know of any?
Yes, there have been many sightings like that. I can't bring up the specifics on one at the moment, but I know there have been many firings.
Earl, what do you think?
Well, the one that I mentioned recently, the one there's a question about tonight over Washington, D.C., was the one that I had stated Admiral Knowles, retired, one of our Board of Governors of NICAP, actually held a piece of the metal in his hands. It was about 2 feet long. It was curved. And that was as a result of anti-aircraft fire, I was told, that hit one of these during that big flap of 52.
And is this pretty well documented and authenticated?
I'll tell you how I learned about it. Through another NICAP board member, Reverend Baller of Massachusetts, and it was Admiral Knowles himself, Reverend Baller told me, told him this.
Mm-hmm. It seems to me I have also read at various places where maybe not have they have fire, but they have chased these things all over the skies, have they not? Have they?
Yes.
Our Air Force have chased these people.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you for calling. Program PM, your question. You'd like to know where you could find out more information on missing or crashed planes connected with UFOs. Do you know where the information might be available? Which books? Are
In the way of books, quickly, I couldn't mention any one particular one where you'd get a bulk of them. Quite a few of
Doesn't
the
Major mention a few in his book?
Yes. Before me here, I have The Flying Saucer Conspiracy of the Majors, and then, of
Major
course,
Keogh,
the Major Keogh, Donnelly Keogh, and then there's the later one still of the Flying Saucer's Top Secret by him, also Carl Lorenzen's latest Great Flying Saucer Hoax. And in all of these books that are written by these better people who know what this is all about, you will find a reference, but I can't tell you just any one place where you could find a great number.
Okay, thank you for calling. Your question, please. We mentioned about ufology members being hams, and you are a member, and a ham. As a comment, about 6 months or so ago, there was a sighting made. It was around the Maple Heights area. Mm-hmm. And there was definite radio disturbance. You didn't see the sighting yourself, but the disturbance, the sighting coordinated was the time you were on the air, and you had radio disturbance. Mm-hmm. So it's as a practical purpose then, too. Mm-hmm. When is the next meeting of the Ufology Project? Which Ufology Project?
Cleveland Ufology? Always the second Saturday of each month at the Central YMCA at 8:30 p.m. Always the second Saturday of each month.
Okay.
That's at 22nd and Prospect.
Central Y. Okay, thank you for calling. Just have a couple minutes left, and I'd like to find out something from Ricky or Bob. I think from past programs, I know Earl's views on these. How do you account for these flying saucers, say, Bob? What kind of is it person, thing, people, it? Who is it? What is it? Who's in them?
Well, I think it's an intelligence far superior to ours, possibly located on one of our solar system planets or possibly a distant galaxy. I would take a chance in saying either Venus or Mars as a possible or likely most probable place for such a civilization to exist.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Is talking on the different types of the occupants, there's so much been written. I really don't think that I go along with these humanoids as we are.
You don't?
Especially the contactee stories. I especially found interest in Carl Lorenzen's book about the South American sightings where they seem to be short little men with bristly hair, and they seem to be very strong.
Well, isn't this the comic book picture, more or less?
Yeah,
short little men with bristly hair and long ears or something, you know?
Yes, but if you take into consideration if these UFOs and these occupants come from a planet that has more of a gravitational pull or atmospheric pressure, they would be shorter.
The hour of time is just about up for this evening on the Ufology Roundtable. Time to move over and make room for the Tom Griffith Show. It's, as always, running short of time. It seems that we just get started on some areas, and there goes the time again. So my thanks very much to Bob Miller up from Newark, Ohio, and the president of the United Saucer Council of Ohio, and Ricky Hilberg, the vice president of the Cleveland branch of that organization, and, of course, to Earl Neff of our own Ufology Roundtable. And Bob Grove, we missed you tonight. We'll call the meeting to order again next Thursday at 10:30 on program